This is the home of your Indianapolis Colts. 96.1 WSBT South Bend, the sports leader. This is the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
Oh, yeah!
On 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
What is this?
We're talking Notre Dame football, the NFL, the Cubs, and more.
Oh, yeah, I like this idea.
The Leprechaun Lunch.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
With Sean Stiers.
All you do is dribble. I have to dribble. If I give it to you, you just shoot.
And Evan Sharpley.
You're a chucker. You chuck.
If it's happening in sports.
Fumble!
We're talking about it.
Flag on the play.
Now your hosts. Woo! Sean Stiers and former Irish quarterback. Evan Sharpley.
Coming to you live from Five Star Dive Bar, downtown Elkhart, on a beautiful August summer day, and I see the Friday golf game is still intact.
Christiana Creek, baby.
Evan Sharpley strolled in. He's got his Titleist visor on, his shades.
Looks good, huh?
How'd it go? What'd you shoot today?
44 today. We just played 9.
Just 9?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sitting there kind of mid-80s is good.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. It means that it's enjoyable.
You're working on your game, though.
I am working on the game. The driving was pretty solid today.
Was it?
Yeah, it's the pitching and the chipping is what I found out that needs to improve.
Short game still needs some work.
Well,
huh?
Today it was putting, which hadn't been the problem in the past.
It's always something, isn't it?
It is always something.
You fix one thing, and then the next thing you know.
But it was a beautiful day out. We're mid-70s? Although I will say, though, getting here was a little tough. Downtown Elkhart right now, we've got a couple of police cars blocking off the road.
Yeah.
And a little paddy wagon. I don't know what's going on.
Something downtown to the north side of downtown?
Yeah,
kind of middle downtown?
Maybe by the end of the show we'll know what it is.
Okay.
Because I saw WSBT. I saw they had a TV camera.
Oh, okay.
Out there, so.
So we'll wait and see what we hear. The news guys are on the spot. Well, of course, the lunch special, and they open for lunch every day at 11 o'clock, 11 a.m. here at Five Star Dive Bar. A couple different specials today. The Buffalo Fried Chicken Sandwich.
Ooh.
With fries. Good one. Comes with some ranch on it as well for $8.
Okay.
Bucks. And then, of course, just like always, the wings special. $7 for a pound of wings, $12 for 2 pounds of wings. You get fries with each of those, or you can do what I did. Put a little roughage in there.
Yeah.
I replaced it.
I need to get some wings, I think.
I tried something different today because I've been doing the wings here for several weeks now, really since they started the wing special. And they're smoked wings, which adds another layer of both texture and flavor to your wings. I always like the smoked wings. Typically, I've gotten just the buffalo sauce, your classic buffalo hot sauce. Today, I went with the Nashville hot sauce.
And how is that?
It is tasty as well. At Nashville, I think there's some honey mixed with some hot sauce.
Ooh.
So a little bit sweeter.
Sounds good.
Today, but still very, very crispy and crunchy and delicious with some ranch dressing that came
with
it.
And we still have the 2-pound challenge. I think we have a couple of guys sitting out here right now at Five Star that may need to try the 2-pound wing challenge during the commercial break.
They don't know it yet.
They don't know it yet,
but
it's coming.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
That's 2 pounds per person, not split between the two of you.
Yeah, gotta throw all 2 pounds of those wings down. But they go down nice. So, all right. So,
what's our countdown, Sean? How many
17
days?
17 days. You knew it was coming.
I knew it was coming.
We've been going, I think, since around 100 days.
I think we're close to 100.
We're whittling. We are chipping away.
I can't believe how close it is. I feel like it's at 100.
I can't either.
And then you're like, oh, the game is tomorrow.
That's exactly. And I mean, high school football starts next week in Indiana.
That's for me too.
Yeah. I mean, it is boom. It is on top of us.
You'll be with Mishawaka again.
That's correct.
Is that correct?
A week from tonight, we will have Mishawaka hosting Portage. And this will be the 8th consecutive year that Mishawaka has hosted Portage, but they're joining the NLC next year, so the schedule is going to change a little bit. This will be the last time that they open with Portage for a long time. It'll be Marion that they will open with next year.
I'm excited for high school football in this area. I think right now there's quite a few teams trending up.
Yeah.
Mishawaka, if you've seen what they've done over the past couple of years,
right.
They've had some great success.
Semi-state last year.
Elkhart Central's another one I'm intrigued
about. That's one
about.
Because they've
got some guys.
They were really competitive last year. They had a lot of good skill guys, including the running back. And this will be their last year as Elkhart Central.
Correct.
Because they'll combine schools next year. Yeah,
they
didn't necessarily win a ton of games, but they were in a lot of games.
I think they lost by like 18 points total in four games,
yep.
I believe.
Yep, and that'll be, well, of course, see them about a month or so into the season when Mishawaka goes to Elkhart Central and plays over there. But, that's a team loaded with talent. They put some points on the board the last couple
years.
Now,
true or false, Coach Kinder at Mishawaka, right?
Right.
True or false here, does he look like the real Slim Shady?
Maybe Slim Shady's dad?
I saw an interview with him recently. I was like, you know what?
I never thought about
taking me back in the day here.
Yeah, because his hair is a little grayer.
Yeah, but it's a similar haircut,
when you think about it. He's got the goatee and the whole thing going. We had him on a couple of days ago on Budweiser's weekday sports beat, and he admitted something without any prompting that kind of took me off guard. His offensive coordinator, Kyle Shaw, left for Edwardsburg this summer. So they used to be co-offensive coordinators when Bart Curtis was still here, but Kyle Shaw was the coordinator last year, and so Keith Kinder's going to kind of take that over a little bit now this year with that being his
Seems
background
like a good
and
fit,
that
though,
whole
too,
thing.
For Shaw to go to Edwardsburg.
Yeah. He's from Michigan originally, and so he'll go up there. But when we were talking about Kyle Shaw, he said he's losing his bachelor buddy. They used to watch The Bachelor.
Oh, my goodness.
And then, sit in the office and talk about it the next day. So I don't know what they're going to do now.
Oh, you didn't ask that question, though. That was unprompted?
Exactly. I asked about Kyle Shaw leaving, and then the next thing we're talking about The Bachelor and guilty pleasures and the whole thing. Do you have a guilty pleasure show of your own?
No.
You don't have
currently.
Any? You don't watch as much TV.
No, right? I pretty much stream everything.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you can have guilty pleasure streaming shows, too.
The Office, I don't think, counts.
No.
Parks and Rec probably doesn't count, no.
No.
That's mainly me, and then I do some of the deeper dive, like Mindhunter, and
I'd say guilty pleasure is more some kind of trash.
Yeah.
Not that I'm calling The Bachelor the trash, but the reality genre is more.
Yeah, I don't do too much of the reality. Well, does Last Chance U count? That's kind of.
That could be, but it's sports related, so you get a pass on that one.
I get a pass because
that's
of
right.
sports.
That's
have
right.
you watched the most recent season of Last Chance U?
I've not seen any of it, but
you
I.
You have not seen any?
I just
We're
got.
Four seasons in.
See, and. I just got a new TV when we moved into our new house, and it's a smart TV. And
so, the Fire
it came,
Stick? Or?
Well, it came with the Netflix and the Amazon apps, and we had subscriptions to both, but I was very selective in what I would watch on Netflix before because I had the little, plug adapter, and I had to, plug my phone in, but then I would watch it on the TV. But now that it's easier, I think I'm going to have to jump into some Last Chance U. I know a lot of people have been on that
I'll
before.
Tell you what, yeah. Four seasons in now.
They fired that last coach, right?
I think he resigned.
Okay.
Was what the official thing was.
But he's got a different story.
He's also under police investigation last
time
I checked for some federal charges.
Exactly. And that was at where? Coffeyville, Kansas?
So there was the first two seasons were in
Mississippi.
And then the last two were in, why am I blanking?
I believe they're in Kansas someplace. One of the junior colleges in Kansas.
I'll remember this. We'll probably look it up or somebody will tell us.
Maybe somewhere. Independence, Coffeyville, one of those.
Independence.
Okay.
Yeah.
Graham Sykes. Well, not from Independence, but Ark City,
really?
Kansas, not too far from Independence.
Okay.
Former Notre Dame baseball coach.
Yeah, at Michigan State.
Yeah. Yep. All right, let's talk some football. You want to?
Let's do it. We're only
since we got our guilty pleasures in, that's right.
We got it all in.
17 days away. One of the things we've been talking about on this show and we've talked about on all the shows, what was going to happen with the captains.
Right.
And so Vince filled in for you last week. We didn't know the captains yet
at that point. How did Vince eat? I was interested on. Did he eat okay last
Vince
week?
Eats like he always eats.
Okay.
It's free and it's in front of him, and he did some damage too.
Did he go wings too?
He went burger. I think he had the mushroom Swiss burger.
Burgers here are great.
And they're huge,
yeah,
too.
They're big.
Yeah, they absolutely are. So glad to have you back, first of all. But thanks to Vince as well for filling in. Seven captains, though. Seven captains. And for
what percentage of the team is that?
Yeah, I know. So what do you think about the fact that seven captains were named?
I don't know. I don't know what to say, Sean.
So you think it's? Do you think it's too many? First of all,
well, I'm sure. You know, I'm sure there's a reason why there were seven named. You know, the thing you know that we kept talking about was number one. I mean, we really didn't know what was going on behind closed doors mm-hmm. on who was maybe asserting themselves as leaders on the team. Was it a little strange that we didn't have a captain coming out of spring ball and then even through the summer too? No, but also, you know, for us. You know, Brian Kelly doesn't owe us an explanation necessarily on when he names the captains or who those were going to be.
Or why, or, you know.
But I think if you look over the past, well, let's just say maybe the past 5 years, you know, the teams that have had the most success, usually the captains are named pretty early because you have an idea, at least from the coaching side, and this goes beyond Brian Kelly, of these are the guys that we're going to be able to rely on that maybe some of the younger guys can say, okay, we want to play like him or we're going to approach the game like him.
Right.
So, you know, I think that that was a little disconcerting that maybe those names hadn't popped up. And again, for us, there maybe had been three on the list and, you know, and Brian Kelly and the coaching staff were like, we'd maybe like to expand that. So we've got three guys now, but let's see how the summer plays out, you know, as we get closer to fall camp and then we're going to look at the whole collection of the team. So, you know, I think it's a, you know, the entire list, I think, encompasses the entire team. If you look at the guys that were named, you know, you've got a couple of different sides of the ball.
You've got I'll run through the list here real quick. You got, of course, you got the quarterback Ian Book. You got
first quarterback then since Jimmy Clausen.
That's right.
Which we can
yeah.
You want me to get into that or not? We don't have to.
I mean, that's up to you.
You can keep going.
You can go
there.
I don't
know if I would count him. I would say that Brady Quinn was probably the last quarterback that was Ooh. Named a captain.
All right.
But yes, yeah, so Ian Book.
It wasn't across the bow or
no,
anything.
No, it was okay. It's okay. I'll send Jimmy a text message here shortly and let him know
right.
that that's what I said, so it's out there. So Ian Book, yeah, I mean, and that goes, I mean, it's that was the one thing in the offseason I think that the coaching staff was looking for was him not to take a step forward from his physical play. Because he had played so well last year, it was he going to be a leader in the huddle? And then ultimately, hey, I'm going to take this over for the full team after Ian.
I'm going to come back
cut
to
you off.
To the, no, I had a thought. I'm going to come back to it. Robert Hainsey on the offensive line.
Yeah.
Good one.
I like that one. You know, and I was a little when he because he came in as an early enrollee guy. Uh-huh. You know, we weren't sure where he was going to be playing. And as a freshman, a true freshman, or redshirt freshman, or not redshirt freshman, as an early and early freshman, got some playing time.
Right.
And he's been a guy that's been in the mix since he stepped on campus. So I think he did a great job. You know, his personality lends to being someone I think that in that room, guys are going to look to. You know, certainly if you're looking at the NFL draft boards going into next season, it's a couple other guys that aren't captains
right.
that are on that list. But you don't necessarily have to be a captain to be a good football player.
No, exactly.
I think a lot of that, again, lends to your personality type. He's very extroverted. You know, I think he's pretty vocal as a leader. And some guys maybe are a little more quiet and lead by example, and that's fine too. But I like that pick on the offensive line.
Yeah, to me, he's maybe a little bit of a mix of Quentin Nelson and Mike McGlinchey.
Good, yeah.
Because he's got, you know, as you say, he's more vocal than Quentin Nelson, mm-hmm. for example, but he's kind of a little bit in that mold, maybe a little bit of edge to him, whereas McGlinchey was more the talkative
yeah.
one. So
Mike was a little bit more than Quentin.
Yeah.
But both very good at their craft.
Yeah.
And I think that we're going to see the same from a guy like Robert Hainsey.
And then you got a fifth-year senior, a guy who was a walk-on, slot receiver Chris Fink.
Over under on, so we've got 12 games, 12 broadcasts. Over under, we'll say, what, three? No, five a game. So what is that?
We're talking receptions?
No, we're talking about number of times that they say he was a former walk-on.
Oh, yeah, no kidding. I mean, really, at this point, that's really, I've heard that quite a bit, actually. even before he was named captain, that was one of the.
I'd say over under three a game. So we're at what? That's 36. Is
yeah.
that the right math? I'm going to take the over.
Now, are we talking TV broadcast that it'll be mentioned?
yes. TV broadcast. If we need to go to, should we just talk the post-game show that you're on?
Yeah, that's right.
How many times will Sean Steyers and Reggie Brooks say that Chris Fink was a...
Former walk-on.
Former walk-on after he has five catches for 100 yards.
That's right. That's a good one. Let's go to the defensive side because then you've got four guys over there. Defensive ends, Julian Okwara and Khalid Kareem.
Great picks.
I think so, too.
I think that, I mean, those two guys are going to anchor this defense. You know, if we're talking about setting the tone at the at the offensive line and what they're doing as defenders, if you can own that line of scrimmage, you know, both of these guys look like they're putting themselves in position to be some high-round draft picks next year as well. You need them to perform well, but they've, you know, they've done a great job in this offseason in setting the tone, I think, for some of the younger guys. So I like those two on the defensive line. And I think then, too, if you look at the strength of this defense, you're going to have some really great talent and leadership at the defensive line position and then also in the secondary, too.
And then the secondary guys, you've got the two safeties, Alohi Gilman and Jalen Elliott.
I mean, number 11 is probably my favorite player on this team.
I think Alohi Gilman would have been the consensus guy. We all would have said
if
that's going to be a captain.
Yeah, if you would have named three, you know, you would think that, or you named two, you know, one on offense, one on defense, you know, he's the guy. He would have been my first pick.
Right.
So, you know, what he's done as far as his on-field performance, always around the football, I think has really revamped the secondary. You know, you rewind the clock here 3-4 years ago. I mean, where was the hole in the defense? It was who's playing safety? Right, I mean, it was kind of a carousel of players that were going through there.
Big question, just 2 years ago.
And now you have two guys that are returning. You have Alohi Gilman and Jalen Elliott, and both guys now being captains.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about over-unders. That was kind of the over-under talking point last year. The safeties had zero interceptions last year. Now Jalen Elliott has this many by himself, and Alohi Gilman and the whole thing. It obviously elevated quite a bit last year with the play of those two guys.
I think there's going to be a lot of production there. You know, I love this scheme, this defensive scheme with Clark Lee, with what the safety position can do. They're very active. You see a lot of rotation. It isn't necessarily a strong safety, free safety type of mentality. Both guys can be pretty much interchangeable. You're going to see them rotating down in the box. They're going to be part of stopping the run. And, you know, to have two guys at the safety position that are captains with a lot of question marks swirling around the linebacker position, I think that's a very positive thing. And I think both of those guys are going to be used, you know, similar to how a hybrid linebacker would be used to come down and help with some run stopping.
Well, that's what we've seen in some of the nickel and dime packages so far, is with the play of Kyle Hamilton, the true freshman who just walked in and wasn't here in the spring, and he's come in and in the media viewings that we've had, five interceptions that he's had already so far.
Who are those five off of?
They're all off the number two quarterback, Phil Jurkovec.
Okay.
But, no, but I mean, it's valid, but at the same time.
I get it.
But my point is they bring Alohi Gilman down a little bit closer to the line of scrimmage and let him do his thing, and they've kind of got Kyle Hamilton able to play center field back there and just go on his instincts, which he's got a lot of, and it's looked pretty good so far.
That's good to hear. I mean, you know, you don't want to force, you know, a player to play what he's not used to. So for younger players, a lot of times it's, you know, if you're able to rotate the other guy and say, okay, you know, you have a third of the field.
Yeah.
Be an athlete. That's a great way to approach it versus saying, you know, you have to just specifically fit into our scheme.
What you had 3-4 years ago.
You probably see that more at the college level because of the turnover. You know, guys graduating or going pro, you know, every 3 or 4 years. So you have to play your defense, your offense too, and special teams to the strengths of what you have. At the pro level, you usually know what you have for, I mean, it could be up to a decade, really, if you have the same type of roster. So you can, you know, you can build a scheme and then try to get players that fit what your scheme is. At the college level, it's adapt or die. And if you're not able to adapt or die, or then allow your players to evolve your scheme, you're going to see, I think, a lot of times, you know, the overall success of what you do is going to go downhill. And I think Notre Dame now over the past 3 or 4 years has done a much better job of saying, well, we can try to curb how we recruit too to fit what we're doing. But also if we get guys on campus here, it's not like, okay, we're saying you are stuck into doing just this. And if you look at the recruiting pattern too, they're recruiting guys that are athletic that could play what? They could play a rush end, they could play a hybrid linebacker position, or they could play safety.
Yeah.
And I think that that's important to note and why this defense has taken a step forward over the last couple of years.
Sean and Chirply Leprechaun Lunch on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, coming to you from Five Star Dive Bar, downtown Elkhart. Great lunch spot lunch special today. Buffalo chicken fried sandwich along with French fries for just $8. And, of course, they also have the smoked wing special every day. You can get a pound for $7 with French fries, 2 pounds for $12 with French fries. So we started off talking about the fact that there were seven captains. And we'll just go to Brian Kelly. And here's his explanation as to why Notre Dame has seven captains this season.
Consensus. I think, you know, when it comes to selecting captains, I've gone through the gamut over 30 years of having two captains. But I think today, consensus, the ability to get together, guys really like to, as a leadership group, have the ability to work together as a group. So I think it has much more to do with their ability to act as a unified group more than it does anything else. And they operate so much easier together as that group. We have kind of laid the groundwork for that with our SWAT team groups. And so it's kind of set into motion this kind of extended leadership within the organization, if you will. So I think I've kind of set that model up in a way where they operate a lot better when there's much more of a consensus. So a lot of the meetings that I've been having over the past years, the last couple years since we set up these SWAT teams, has been with 8, 9, 10 individuals, and they just feel much more comfortable and have led in that fashion. So that's why you're seeing a little bit more in terms of captains.
So there you go. Lead by consensus is what he's talking about. And part of the reason, too, that I think they ended up with seven is because the players voted on this, and Brian Kelly specifically mentioned that Chris Fink, who we talked about, was on 70% of the ballots. So you were talking about when you were playing at Notre Dame, and sometimes the captains fit, sometimes they didn't. Did you guys always vote, or was that determined by the coaching staff?
We voted, but I don't think it was always. I don't think it was always determined by us.
You still think maybe there was some ballot tampering?
I don't think that there were a few that were on 70% of the ballots.
Yeah,
I will say that. I mean, I think that there was something to be said with some of the guys that were named that probably were on 70 or 80% of the ballots. You know, there were a lot of times we knew who the guys were that were leaders on our team. But there were also, I mean, the coaches had some say too. And I'm, you know, now that I'm not a player, I understand why that's part of the discussion is, you know, if the coaching staff, they deem someone, you know, as far as a general consensus that they are a captain too, it makes sense. But if you're publicly saying that these guys were all named by their peers, and maybe that really wasn't the case. You know, with this list here, you know, I think that that's probably true. I don't think there's anybody on this list that you would say wasn't nominated by their peers. I can 100% see why a guy like Chris Fink would be on 70 or 80% of the ballots.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been in the program now, you know, for a number of years and has worked his tail off to work from being, you know, a walk-on position to earning a scholarship and producing on the football field. And
so that's one for you. That's your mention right there.
Yeah. We're at one. What did I say? Yeah. Three per any broadcast.
Yeah.
How about that?
There you go.
Per any post game show. But you guys have 2 hours though, so
that's true.
Are we at 1.5 then because it's an hour show right now?
Good question.
I don't know. We'll have to figure out how that exactly works, because if it's a 3 or 4 hour game and we're setting it at 3, I mean, one per hour, I guess. So 4. I mean, or I guess we're about that. Yeah. So I mean, yeah. You know, it says a lot about the guys, and you know, I think you know, again, this gets a little bit back to, you know, our perceived issue with the timing of it, whether that is a red flag or not.
Well, and what he said was they've got seven, yeah. And there were plenty. What he talked about the SWAT teams, which is part of their off-season training and stuff.
Are they maybe 3 years maybe in undoing that?
It seems like it.
And
I think
so,
it was right around the time that he kind of overhauled the, you know, after 4-8 and overhauled the staff and everything.
So, yeah, I think following that, you know, in the offseason, what they started to do was, and this wasn't just predicated on, you know, you being in the program for 4 years. It was, you know, they were going to set up SWAT teams on guys that they felt had good leadership. And I know that, you know, they're doing some things behind the scenes with, you know, a couple of different programs that look at developing leadership. You know, Clemson does this, Alabama, if we're going to cite, you know, really the two most, you know, successful programs in the nation at this point right now. And Ohio State, same thing. As far as, you know, building out leadership within the team where it's not necessarily just, you know, you can put a C on someone's chest.
Right.
But there certainly are going to be other guys in leadership positions, with whether it's within position groups, within, you know, a senior, junior, sophomore, freshman, within those classes that are going to be leaders. You know, you could have guys that specifically are leaders in the weight room or out doing speed and agility or in the skill side. So I think that there's been a nice shift in saying, yes, we have seven guys, but it's not just those seven guys. We have other guys that are in leadership positions.
Well, and that's, I guess, we'll kind of wrap this part of the show on this, and then we'll take a break and come back. We've got a lot more things that we can talk about today. But when it comes to being a captain, do you think that that is more important Monday through Friday or on Saturdays, on game day?
I guess Saturday is probably because the referees get to talk to you.
All seven of you. Then they get a little bit chippy because they're like, which one of you is the captain?
Who are they going to talk to?
I'm the captain. I can talk to you.
All come out here to talk. We'll all come out here and talk to you together. So yeah,
Four guys on defense who can get on the guy.
You know, I think that it's on Saturdays, those are the guys that you're going to see probably more prominently behind closed doors. It's not going to just be – the signs of good teams are not necessarily just the guys who have C's on their chest. It's going to be those guys, and it's going to be then maybe a tier two or tier three who are providing leadership within position groups, again, or offense, defense, special teams. I think that's where you see the really special units as a whole. You know, 100 guys where it isn't just a collection of captains. It's a collection of the captains plus guys that are also saying, here's how things should be done, and holding everyone accountable. And that's even the captains too, because listen, it's hard, even if you have that C for captain on your chest, to do it day in and day out,
yeah.
Right? So it might be a guy under them saying, hey, you know what? I've got you today. And hopefully that's what this team has is, you know, they have a tiered setup of guys that can be in leadership roles that can help. Really, it's about accountability. I know, yeah. It's silly. I know it's a cliche.
It's what it comes down to.
It's one of the traits that we hear about, I'm sure, all the time. But it's true. You know, you want the captains to hold everyone underneath them accountable, but there's also going to be guys that are saying, we're going to hold you accountable too.
Yeah.
On days where, because it's, I mean,
everybody has a bad day.
It is. It's a long season, you know, and you want, that's the type of family setup that you need to have.
Yep. He's Evan Sharpley, along with Sean Stiers, 5-star dive bar downtown Elkhart. Again, the Buffalo Fried Chicken Sandwich is a special today with French fries for $8. When we come back, Pro Football Focus ranked every Division I quarterback 1 through 130 this season. Where does Ian Book?
I feel bad for the 130th quarterback.
I know, right? I know. Let me tell you. Notre Dame will see a quarterback that's not quite 130, but he's pretty far down. That are pretty far down.
I followed him, his recruitment.
Did you? Okay. Yeah. We'll talk about him. We'll talk about where Ian Book falls, and we also have a game of Who Said It? We're bringing that back. We last did it in the spring, and we will do that coming up in just a few minutes. Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Leprechaun Lunch, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader from 5-star Dive Bar in downtown Elkhart. As we continue with some Notre Dame football conversation, we'll get that game of Who Said It coming up here in just a few minutes. Now, I mentioned going into our last break, Pro Football Focus ranked every Division I quarterback 1 through 130 going into the season. We'll tell you where Ian Book and some of the other quarterbacks are on the list here in just a minute. But a guy at number 128. Made the list.
Make
Did
it.
They even have Pro Football Focus back then?
I don't
then?
Know.
So Notre Dame is going to see.
There's a good collection here.
Yeah, I mean, you run the gamut with what Notre Dame is going to see this season. Number 7, KJ Costello.
I thought that was high, though. Okay, sorry.
I think it's a little high. I know Eric Hansen really likes KJ Costello.
I don't dislike him, but. I like
top seven. I don't know.
I like the USC quarterbacks who are like 60th.
JT Daniels and Jack Sears. They have a slash. They put them at number 67 on the list.
And I think a lot of that has to do more with the state of the USC program.
Yeah.
You would say Stanford's a little more stable.
Interesting conversation. Lynn Swann was on the Dan Patrick Show earlier today, and he talked about the fact that they had made 18 staff changes in the offseason. And he kind of patted himself on the back for that. I mean, obviously, Brian Kelly overhauled his staff, but 18 is a lot, especially if you're going to keep the head coach.
Right.
If you're gonna get rid of 18, it seems like you might as well just start at the top and clean house.
Let's just get everybody out of here. I mean, it must have been a toxic environment.
Yeah. I don't know.
So, I think this is make or break year for Helton and Swann at USC.
Yeah, I mean.
And I still have, I don't know if you're a betting man, but I don't know what the odds are in Vegas.
Everybody's going to be a betting man soon, right?
That's true. They passed all these rules. Urban Meyer being the coach at USC next year. If Lynn Swann, well, if he's either there, but if Helton is gone.
I think that's, I'd like to see what the Vegas odds are on that. It's got to be out there.
If it's
right
a decent
now.
Line, I might lay some money on that.
Yeah, because Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart came out and said they're going to be doing that pregame show with him, that they're going to be working on him all year long if things go wrong.
And then he would be the first coach in the history of NCAA to win three national championships
with
three different schools.
Yeah. That's got to be in his mind, too.
Because if there's something that you can lay money on with Urban Meyer, is that he's going to win national championships.
He loves Urban Meyer.
And that he's going to have some type of NCAA investigation follow him after he leaves.
Yeah. Which USC has kind of shown they're fine with as long as you win some football games.
Well, I think most schools are okay. As long as you win, we'll be okay. It's all right.
Jake Fromm from Georgia is number 9. Notre Dame will see him in week 3. Shea Patterson from Michigan, number 13.
I know we're not talking the full list because a lot of this has to do with, but quarterback that left Georgia, went to Washington. Why am I blanking on his name right now? I got to think that he's going to be in the top 25 too, right?
Went to Washington.
Yeah. We'll look this one up too.
Okay. All right. Not sure off the top of my head. Okay. Anthony Brown, Boston College, is number 45.
He's a good buddy with Brandon Winbush.
Okay.
Same quarterback trainer.
Didn't realize that. And, I mean, there's kind of some similarities between the two. A couple good athletes, not a high completion percentage.
A lot of them have the same stroke as far as how they throw.
Yep. Malcolm Perry from Navy at number 71.
Jacob Eason was the quarterback that got hurt at Georgia and then Fromm took over.
Okay.
I got to think he's going to be in the top, probably top 52.
I think so.
We'll check.
We kind of put this list together based on
who they're playing.
Kind of more, yeah, exactly.
That was off topic. Sorry.
That's okay.
Sorry,
that's all right. Ryan Willis, Virginia Tech. We saw him last year. Comes in at number 73. Quentin Harris from Duke is number 91. Grant Loy from Bowling Green, 116. Tevaka Tuioti of New Mexico, 125. And coming in at 128, just a couple of spots away from the bottom of the list at 130, is Juwan Pass of Louisville. And you were telling me during the break that you saw a lot of this guy during the recruiting process.
Yeah, he had a tough time. I think he was on Notre Dame's radar briefly, but he had a really tough time completing passes with no defense, like non-7-on-7. And Pro Football Focus, in their write-up, you know, they posted his adjusted completion percentage. They didn't even note what his actual completion percentage was. So he's sitting at 63%, you know, or 64% right around there, and you would say, well, that's not terrible, but they didn't even list
his completion percentage is.
And just to put that in perspective, you know, Ian Book, he was at 68%, and his adjusted was at 76%.
Mm.
So that's what? That's like 9 points. So if you subtract,
what do they base the adjusted on?
To think that that's going to be drops,
okay,
and maybe balls that are in play or in the vicinity that just aren't
caught. Okay,
I think that that's got to have something to do with it. So if you take 9 points off of pass, you know, you're looking at low 50s.
Okay, interesting. Oh, and also I forgot Bryce Perkins of Virginia. Another pretty good quarterback, number 15.
He's a sneaky guy. So if you look at the list, and especially teams that Notre Dame is going to play, you know, with Costello being 7th, Patterson or Fromm at 9, Patterson at 13, Perkins is a guy that I'd still keep an eye on. And I noted, too, the two USC quarterbacks, who I think fairly highly of. You know, I saw them both out of high school. JT Daniels, he regraded, and actually, you know, a lot of the times you see quarterbacks will regrade to play in a younger grade. He regraded so that he was in an older grade,
which really?
Might have actually been his original grade. He might have regraded earlier, too.
Uh-huh.
But that was so that he could get to USC earlier.
Makes sense.
And Jack Sears, too. You know, his recruitment really took off. He had a really good between junior and senior season before he committed to USC. Both of those guys, I think, are really good. But Perkins is another guy, you know, a true dual threat. You know, he can hurt you with his arm, but he can also make some plays with his feet, too. He's another guy, you know, you don't see a lot of publicity about. But he's another guy on this roster. And really, then, if you're looking at the complete collection, you know, at least from what Pro Football Focus is looking at, you have number 7, number 9, number 13, number 15, you know, all on this schedule of 12 games.
Yeah.
And if you're circling some games,
and three
right
of them
now,
are those road games.
If you're circling games right now, what you're probably going to be circling, what you're probably going to be circling, Michigan and Georgia,
yep.
And you're going to be circling Stanford.
Exactly.
Three of those, you have good quarterback play, and at the college level and pro level too. If you have good quarterback play, you're going to be in the football game. So Notre Dame's defense is going to have their work cut out for them against those guys.
Absolutely. And just real quick through the top of the list: Trevor Lawrence of Clemson, number 1. Tua from Alabama, number 2. Justin Herbert, Oregon, number 3. Derek King of Houston is number 4. Mason Fine from North Texas, number 5. And Sam Ellinger from Texas at number 6. And then you've got Brock Purdy of Iowa State at number 8. Khalil Tate, Arizona, mm-hmm. number 10. Great athlete, more a true running guy. He ran for – he was close to the nation's lead in rushing a couple years ago when Josh Adams was still at Notre Dame. So – I would call him more a true runner.
I agree.
Than a passer.
He's a run first guy.
Yeah. He can throw the ball a little bit.
And
anyway.
Guess who we'll see here in 2020? Trevor Lawrence.
Oh, that's
South
right.
Bend.
Yeah, that's right.
Because he still can't go pro.
I know that makes you
would
sad.
Would you have drafted him number 1 overall last year? Given the crop of talent,
I think
you
would have been
quarterback talent.
Based on what we saw. Like if I was the New York Giants, I would rather have Trevor Lawrence than Daniel Jones. Although they really like Daniel Jones.
after his first preseason game, right?
Yeah. They're loving him now. They're already talking about whether or not he's going to replace Eli Manning. So Ian Book comes in at number 18 on this list.
Yeah.
You good with that? You think that's a pretty fair place for him?
I think so. I mean, you know, he has really one full year, you know, of film and logging that type of experience. I think that's a good spot for him. I think that he has the ability to knock the door down potentially and jump into the top 10. You know, given this Irish football team, I think there's going to be a lot on his shoulders as far as how he's going to need to produce for them to have success. So the opportunity is going to be there. For him to go out there and have a really good season. We've seen what he's been able to do in the short and intermediate game. Really, for me, you know, if he's gonna make a statement to be a guy who is in the top 10, you look at a guy like Tua, you look at a guy like Trevor Lawrence, they can complete those short to intermediate passes, but why do they have a high touchdown rate to low interception is they can hit on some of those home runs.
Yeah.
And really, let's just look at, you know, the success. Trevor Lawrence, you know, the throw that I looked to is in the national championship game, and it was a 3rd and long, and he puts a ball on a line probably 50 yards for a touchdown pass in a crucial, you know, situation where if Alabama gets off the field, you know, who knows how that momentum swings the tide of the game. And that was, you know, Clemson had and Dabo Swinney had a lot of confidence in saying, Trevor Lawrence, we know you can make this throw. Is, okay, now can you complete passes in these two levels, short to intermediate, and now can you hit on a touchdown that's maybe 80 yards?
Right. And that's, I think what we're all looking
and
at.
And I think he has the capability to do that.
Yeah.
You know, if you can complete adjusted completion percentage, 75% of your passes, who's saying you can't chuck one deep and, you know, be able to connect on a touchdown pass?
Sure. I'll read you the review that Pro Football Focus gave Ian Book. It said he came on strong during the Wake Forest game a year ago, firmly grasped the starting role, and didn't look back. He finished with an inspiring 67.9 completion percentage and the 11th best adjusted completion percentage at 75.7 among active quarterbacks. So he's really high among that adjusted. Well, he may not attempt those big-time throws down the field as much as others on this list. He keeps the Fighting Irish offense on schedule, on pace, and in the right place to win every game, every time he's on the field. The sky's the limit for Book, whose only defeat as a starter has come against the defending national champion Clemson Tigers. So let's say he does move into the top 8 or 10, and he's making those plays downfield. Is he going to have a decision to make in terms of his future and whether or not he's back at Notre Dame a year from now?
I think the perception will still be he's a 6 foot tall pocket passer, even though that's not necessarily how I look at him.
Okay.
In short, no. You know, I think even if he has an exceptional year, will his stock be any higher? Probably not, but I don't think that he'd have a decision to make in saying it's time to leave.
Okay.
You know, Notre Dame has done a good job, though. I will say this. Notre Dame has done a good job under Brian Kelly and Charlie Weiss, too, in being able to, generate and understand interest from the pro level in saying, you know, where are these guys? And Julian Love is really a good example last year's. You know, I don't think he could have had a much better season.
There's nothing he could do.
And he still graded out as, a second or third round pick.
Right.
So in his mind is saying, well, if I come back, how do I trump what I did last year?
Exactly.
Does that really mean that I'm going to end up being a guaranteed first round pick? And I think that he understood that. Now he's on a roster in a position to, get on the field. For Ian Book, it may be generating more time under the microscope as the Notre Dame quarterback and, more film. So I think there's always going to be that perception, of being a guy who's prototypically undersized compared to what I think historically what NFL quarterbacks are supposed to be.
Yeah.
That trend is being bumped a little bit now with Kyler Murray and Baker Mayfield and those guys, and really if you look at the OG of undersized quarterbacks and Drew Brees,
yeah,
who's breaking all of these passing records and touchdowns and has continued to have success even later in his career now too, they're still the exception.
Yeah.
If you look at guys, mostly GMs are drafting your 6'3 plus, or right. I mean, I could say 6'4, 6'5 plus.
Yeah, they are.
Who are more pocket guys. But I think the trend, you're seeing a conversion right now in NFL offenses, too, between the college and pro game, where you've got to have guys that can be able to run some of the zone read or RPOs, which have been happening for a long time. But I think, can this guy pick up 5 yards or 8 yards if the situation presents itself?
Right.
He doesn't need to be a Michael Vick, that type of style, where he's 95 across the board on Madden on speed and acceleration and improvisation. But I think that conversation is still going to be had. So I said all of that to say, even if Ian Book has an exceptional year, I don't think there's going to be a conversation on whether he's back.
Okay.
I think he's back.
No matter what. Okay.
And I think that's good for Notre Dame. I think it's good for Ian Book, too.
Yeah.
I mean, he could be
a lot of consistency.
He could then, put himself into the conversation as a three-year starter and a guy who potentially, because if they win 9 or 10 games this year, they won 12 last year, and he won 10 of those?
Yeah.
9 of those, 10 of those?
9.
And then going into next season, I mean, you're going to leave your stamp on a program, as the Notre Dame quarterback, which means a lot to the fan base. And then historically, too, as a guy who, he's going to leave it all on the table, I think.
Right, exactly. Let's take a timeout. When we come back, we'll play our game of Who Said It. I've got 4 different audio sound clips from some Notre Dame football players. I'm going to play them for Evan one at a time, and he'll try to guess who they are. We'll have a little fun with it, as we always do when we play Who Said It? Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch from 5-Star Dive Bar, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. We've got about 6 minutes to go. Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. We're going to get right to our game of Who Said It? So I've got four different sound bites. We might get to three. We'll see. And we'll see if Evan can guess them. So we will start. These are all, the hint here is these are all among the seven Notre Dame captains who are doing the speaking. Okay, right. So that is your lone hint there. Notre Dame captains, here is cut number one.
What a lot of people don't understand is that in training camp, the depth chart is fluid, you know, and so if you have, you string along two or three bad days, you deserve to get moved down. You know, we don't have time to really wait on people and see how it's going to turn out. It's almost game time. And so I wasn't holding up my end of the bargain. I wasn't playing well enough. So when I got in that second group, I had to refocus, you know, and I had to think about what was important and get back to the basics, you know. And so once I did that, once I allowed myself to stop thinking so much, stop trying to always make the big play and just do my job, that's when everything kind of started to come back to me. And, you know, it's really important to just get back to the basics at the end of the day when you're seeing too much.
Okay, Evan Sharpley, who said it?
Jalen Elliott.
Boom! You nailed it. And I love that soundbite, by the way.
Two-way player in high school. He played quarterback.
That's right. Somebody asked him, were you a quarterback or were you a defensive back?
He was a winner is what he was,
that's
man.
Exactly
he led his high school football team, Virginia, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh,
but
man.
The context of that soundbite is he was asked because going into last fall camp, he had been kind of demoted to number two, and he was a guy we had all but written off, and then all of a sudden he comes on and he was asked, how do you handle that after playing so much the year before, you're running with the number two team? And I just love the response that he had.
There was a lot of buzz about him too as a freshman.
Yeah,
and it was,
and then it really,
like, I think, you know, he didn't adjust. As you know, some guys adjust quickly, some guys don't, and he didn't. But a lot of, you know, kudos to him to continuing to, because a lot of guys, you can go in the tank, or I guess in today's day and age, you go somewhere else.
That's exactly right.
But he stuck it out. He continued to work, and he's a captain and a starter now.
Yep, and you just love to hear. And, you know, when you hear him with that kind of perspective, it's obviously why he ended up being one of the captains, I think. Okay, so that was number one. You're one for one.
All right.
Let's go to cut number two.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great tradition of leadership within our group. I've played with Mike Hugh, Alex and Sam, all four guys who taught me a ton. You know, Hunter Bivin is a great guy who still have around. He's taught me how to lead ever since I was younger. And I mean, you know who those guys played with. I mean, the Zach Martins, Nick Martins, the Chris Watts, all those great players, Ronnie Stanley, that they were able to learn from, and Pat, and they learned from them. And then I got to learn from these guys. And it's just it's a special thing to be able to continue that tradition. And like I said, it's an honor, and it's a very high distinction that I feel honored to receive.
Well, that was kind of like a layup, right?
That was. I didn't realize how simple this one was going to be.
Or if I missed your 45% Tom Noyce, just like shooting a three-pointer.
That's right.
Robert Hainsey.
And, of course, he was asked and talking about the tradition of being another offensive line captain, and he mentioned guys like Mike McGlinchey, Quentin Nelson.
You know, I played golf
Alex
with
Parr,
someone
Sam
last
Mustafer.
Week in a golf outing that said Tom Noy is not actually a 45% three-point shooter. He plays with him.
So there's a myth. He's built his own myth, huh?
I think we got to confirm before.
Was he like higher?
I don't know. He did not say, but it, the perception I got was that it was lower.
He did not buy into that. Okay.
So we got to check before we make the shirts.
All right. Let's get one more. let's get one more. Who said it? Cut in here. Here's number three.
Yeah, I was out of school that day visiting the University of Dayton for a football visit, and I had gotten back by the end of the school day because we had basketball practice, and Coach Kelly and Coach Elson were there to see Nick Coleman, and Ed Domsites, my head football coach in high school, he brought me over to introduce me to Coach Kelly. I thought he was just going to tell me to say hi, and Coach Kelly hit me with how'd you like to walk on, and I was kind of stunned, and I gave an answer I'm not proud of. He said, would you like to play big-time football? I said, I think so, and luckily he still gave me a chance after that, let me apply over the weekend, and they let me come in and walk on, so.
How many times did he say it in the 15-second clip?
That's right.
Chris Fink,
talking about the first time
the
he met Brian Kelly.
Fox,
the
right?
Slippery Fox. Three for three today. Good
job. He's been to Sharpley training, too.
Has he?
Yeah.
That's right, because he used to work out with Wimbush,
He's
right?
He's good friends with Brandon. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's right. All right. Good stuff. All right, so we got a minute left. You went three for three, but you're right. It ended up being, I mean, the last two were pretty hard layups there. I mean, even Tom Noy could shoot 45% against
maybe
that.
Maybe he got fouled, you know, while he was a chance for a 4-point play right there.
Laying the gauntlet down. I might see him tomorrow, so we'll see what happens.
Tell him
there.
It didn't come from me.
Okay. All right. Came from elsewhere. That's right, because it was someone you play with who says, not so fast. Tom Noy, Mr. 45%.
And I said, I don't know. I have it under good direction that it's 45%.
Yep. All right. We've got more Notre Dame practice we're going to go out and watch tomorrow for a couple of hours. And then Wednesday is media day. So we'll have plenty to talk about when we get back. And we'll only be 10 days away from the kickoff of the Notre Dame football season when we're back next week. Believe it or not. So that's what we've got for today. Five-star dive bar, Sean and Sharpley. Leprechaun Lunch, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.